Now. Real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
All right, that time of the evening we talk to somebody who's maybe a little bit more unusual, or and our special guest tonight is here to talk about the joys of wild food and foraging. Barry Reid has become an expert in foraged foods in recent years. His first memories of foraging comes from picking berries with his gran Margie when he was a kid. I used to pick berries with me ta. Anyway, he's now the development and chef and forager at the Glenview Hotel in County Wicklow, which is a beautiful hotel, can I just point out, by the way. You can find him on Instagram at The Fanatical Forager. And there's a dot in between those three words, The Fanatical Forager. Aside from berries with his granny when he was a kid, Barry had expanded his gathering to mushrooms, nettles, wild leek, sorrel, wild garlic, dock. Oh, dock leaves. I used to wipe my bum with them. Dandelion. And the list goes on. And Barry joins me because I had a very stereotypical view of what I thought a forager was, Barry, before I talked to you. Anyway, Barry, this word foraging can mean anything really, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely, Niall. Yeah, pleased to meet you and thanks for having me on. Yeah, foraging is basically gathering wild food, I suppose, in essence, you know.
Yeah. And what kind of first sparked your kind of interest in foraging? Was it with the berries? Was it the berries with your granny?
I suppose making jam with my granny and hearing the old wives' tales. Oh, geez, we used to eat nettle soup and all this. And then, like as a young child, 8, 9, 10, 11, myself and my brother used to do a lot of fishing, spend a lot of time in the woods. And I suppose it would have started from there, you know.
Mm. My dad used to bring us down the country lanes, you know, with a plastic bag.
The hedgerows.
Yeah, and we'd pick the berries. And then I'd bring them home. My ma would wash them, put them in the pot with sugar and water and make jam out of them. And then I used to get hives from the jam.
No way. You sure wasn't the sugar, maybe?
Maybe it was the sugar. Maybe it was just too much sugar, but it was gorgeous. I used to love it. I mean, where do you normally go foraging? Where just into any forest?
Yeah, well, everywhere and anywhere. Obviously, with the foraging, you don't want to be driving 10 kilometres to get something that you can find, you know, a kilometre away. So I suppose the first thing you take into consideration is, you know, how far do I have to go to get something? Is it worth my while travelling 10 kilometres to get, you know, to get something? So basically, my journey started there when myself and my fiance, we met in music college and we'd finished music college, and she didn't want to move to Arklow where I was from. I didn't want to move to Tullow where she was from. And we got a lovely little house. We rented a house in Annacorra in County Wicklow there. And the back garden, the fence, basically the back fence, the gate opened into a huge woodlands. And so I just became obsessed with walking out there and started bringing flowers home and, you know, trying to identify them. And I just caught the bug, basically, you know.
Yeah. There's some great apps now you can get for your iPhone.
They weren't around, unfortunately, when I was starting.
No, probably not.
Yeah, even Google Reverse Image and all are very good. Obviously, you have to be very careful because there are poisonous plants out there, you know.
Yeah. So this is the danger. You have to be careful of the poisonous stuff, particularly when it comes to mushrooms and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. And you need to, like, I've been on so many different kind of, I've been out on walks with professional foragers and, you know, that's kind of where it started. And basically, when my sister kind of seen I was getting into all this, and she bought me a wild food workshop with a woman called Eleanor Sutherland from Hollywood there in Wicklow. And it was basically included a wild food lunch and a wild food walk. Mm. And I was just blown. I couldn't believe you can eat this, you can eat that, you can eat this. And I know what this is, I know what that is from a child. And I suppose when I really got hooked was something called the pig nuts. So she basically found this plant and she started following the root, digging with a little stick. And next thing, this tubular came up. It is a tubular, but it tastes like a nut. It's about the size of a hazelnut. And she gave everybody a taste. And I threw one of these in my mouth and I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe she's followed this tiny root to, you know,
find this in a nut. Yeah.
Yeah, which is edible, and it's just amazing. And that's when I really got obsessed at that point, and I just needed to know more.
I've never tried any of this stuff. Like nettles, the only thing I associate with nettles is getting the hand stung off you when you were a kid.
Yeah. No, you know? Absolutely.
So what do you make out of nettles? Soup, I assume. Just soup, is it?
Yeah, nettle soup, nettle pesto is great. In the Glenview, nettle and cheese has a great affiliation because before Rennet, and stuff like that, nettle will actually curdle milk, the nettle juice, or putting nettles into milk. So before all of these rennets and stuff like that, nettles were used to curdle milk to make cheese. So nettle and cheese have a great affiliation. So we do goat cheese and nettle croquette in the Denview Hotel. We do nettle soup, obviously nettle pestos. You could do sautéed nettle with garlic. I mean, you know, there's so many different applications for it, like, you know.
And it comes naturally from the wild. You know, you don't
Absolutely, yeah. And the nettle, marigold love is great. And if you're harvesting nettle for consumption, if you're making beer or wines or anything else, you can go a couple of nodes down. But if it's for, you know, consumption for pestos, you only take the top kind of two sets of leaves. And a marigold glove, you won't get stung through them, and a nice pair of scissors, so you can harvest away. So there's two ways of neutralizing the sting. Then at that point, you can steam the nettles, or you can just blanch the nettles, and it literally takes 30 seconds, and you take the nettles out, refresh them in ice water, and you can stick your hand in, and the sting is completely gone at that point.
Okay,
you know?
Okay, yeah. And yeah, they, by the way, are nettles and this kind of stuff, are a lot of these things seasonal, or are they there all year round?
No, they would be very seasonal, yeah, seasonal. The weird thing about nettles is you'll get the kind of spring, you know, you get a burst of it in spring, and then a couple of months later, they'll come back again. So you kind of get two little runs at the nettles, you know.
Okay, the other thing is that I didn't realise there's such a thing as wild leek and wild garlic. So what is wild leek? I'm assuming that's not the name of the plant, it's just what we call it.
The common names now, I will have to admit that I'm not great with the botanical names, I'm dyslexic. So tree-cornered leek would be the most common name. I like to call it wild leek.
Yeah.
And then you've got the wild garlic. And if you know them two plants, you basically have a member of the onion family all year round. So the onion family is Allium. So the wild leek is out now, but the garlic is starting now. The garlic will run up until June, July. You harvest the leaves.
And does it taste like normal garlic?
The wild garlic, a lot of people who don't like garlic actually like wild garlic. It's a little bit milder, I suppose.
Mm.
So if you know them two plants, basically collect the wild garlic seeds, the flowers, and then when the wild garlic dies away, the wild leek starts to come back.
Yeah.
So if you know them two plants alone, you've got something, and you know where to grow, you've got something you can add to your diet all year round, which is quite amazing.
The other one I spotted there was the dock. Now, dock leaves, I remember as a kid, for the wrong reasons, people were caught short in a forest, you'd use the dock leaves to wipe your bottom
absolutely,
with. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you can eat the dock leaves, you can cook them as well.
Absolutely.
Not obviously after they've been used to wipe somebody's bum, can I just point out?
Obviously. Well, that's the other thing about foraging, especially, you know, among tracks maybe where people have walk dogs. So you have to kind of go off the beaten track up the hedgerows where people don't really go. But the really young dock leaves, really small ones, are edible. They're not really bitter. But as they get bigger, they get bitter. So you can combat that by blanching them. And I don't know if you've ever seen people like to wrap minced meat and all in kind of.
Oh, I've seen them. Well, that's right. Yeah.
So you can do the very same with dock. You blanch it, and that'll take some of the bitterness away, and it'll soften the leaf. And then you can make them little kind of meatball parcels with the dock leaf, which are very nice as well, you know. Yeah.
And in relation to mushrooms, now, mushrooms, of course, you have to head out early in the morning, I assume, to get your mushrooms.
You do.
And you have to be careful which ones you pick, of course.
Absolutely. With mushrooms, I have been on so many professional mushroom hunts with Bill O'Dea and different people. And look, at with mushrooms, I would say you stick to the 5 or 6 mushrooms that you can't really misidentify. And, you know, but for someone who's starting out, you definitely need to go out with a professional, you know. 5 or 6 times.
Because I knew a bunch of lads used to go looking for mushrooms when I was a teenager, and they weren't for the eating bug. Well, they were for the eating bugs, but they're the wrong type of mushrooms.
Yeah.
The magic variety.
A lot of people ask me about them. As soon as they hear you're a forager and you're into mushrooms, oh, the magic ones, is it? Yeah. And I go, no, well, it's not the magic ones, but I know where they grow if you want to know.
I don't need to know, you're grand.
I'd be saying to people,
What about safety and sustainability? Because I imagine there's a lot of stuff that might be poisonous too that you have to be very careful of. So
yeah, there is.
I mean, what are the most dangerous plants? I mean, there are some that it would be reasonably dangerous to eat, wouldn't there?
Well, water hemlock would be up there with one of the most dangerous. One of the most misidentified plants, which can be dangerous as well, is the lords and ladies. Have you ever heard of that?
No. What are they?
Okay, yeah. It's a plant. The leaves and all come first, and then it shoots this little stem up with red berries. If you've ever been walking in the woodlands, kind of August, September, and you see this little stalk with just maybe 12, 18 red berries sticking up out of it.
Mm-hmm. I think I know the one, I think I know the one.
It's the most misidentified plant in Europe, and a lot of people misidentify it with sheep sorrel because the young leaves are the very same shape. I misidentified it once when I was starting my journey, and I thought, oh, this is sheep sorrel. Looked in the book, this is sheep sorrel. Threw a little leaf in my mouth, and next thing my whole mouth starts tingling and my lips swell up.
God.
Yeah. So that's one of the most misidentified plants in Europe, actually. So the cuckoo plint or lords and ladies. There's a couple of different names on it. You have to be careful, you know.
What is that the most challenging part of kind of foraging in Ireland and in our climate landscape is, you know, kind of keeping away from the stuff that might be dangerous? Is that the kind of most...
Absolutely, yeah. The umbilical family, you would stay away from. But, like, everyone knows what a dandelion looks like, a dandelion leaf, a dock leaf. So just stick to the basics starting out, you know, go on some professional foraging courses.
Yeah. Is there any laws around foraging? I mean,
there's one particular plant, St. John's wort. I don't know if you've
heard
that.
I've heard of that. That's the stuff.
So it's illegal. You can't buy it anywhere in health food shops in Ireland. And
they used to sell it, and they took it off the market going back a good few years ago. I think you can still buy it in the UK.
You can buy it in the UK and other countries, but it's illegal to forage St. John's wort in Ireland. So,
and why is that?
I really don't know. I mean, if you look into the health benefits of St. John's wort, for seasonal disorder, and I mean, it has a huge history of being used as a wild herb for mental health and different disorders. So, look, I honestly don't know. That's my honest answer.
I mean, when you look at all the stuff that we take nowadays, even including medicines that we take, most of it all comes from the ground originally or was discovered by accident in the ground.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, from a foraging point of view, is that something you have an interest in, things that have, you know, health benefits as well as tasting good?
Yeah, absolutely. When I started, I would have been more so really analysing the health benefits. And one of the biggest things that struck me is a plant that we have grown all over Ireland and Europe is valerian. And the root is what they harvest. And that's where they derived the drug Valium from. Now, Valium is highly addictive, but valerian root is not addictive. And it can do the same thing. It can have the same effect on people, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose there's a lot of misconceptions people have about foraging itself. I mean, when you think of a forager, you think of somebody looking through bins sometimes as well. Foraging. You know, I mean, what do people say to you when you say, oh, I'm a forager? What do they have a misconception or a stereotype about what you are?
No, the attitude has changed. Like, when I started off, it was a big thing. It was a big wow. And now there's so many people doing it these days, and, you know, I'll be speaking to people and sometimes they know something that I won't know. And, you know, it's really starting to be accepted, I think. And people are, you know, looking out for restaurants, I think, that use wild food.
And is there many restaurants apart from obviously the one you're involved in, which is in the Glenview Hotel in County Wicklow? There many restaurants now that would use, you know, food sourced through foraging?
Yeah, absolutely. And I presume you've heard of the Brook Lodge, which would be one of the biggest. And maybe, you know, when I was starting off, a venue that would have inspired me as well. You know, you'd be seeing pictures on social media and. Yeah, I mean, they have a huge influence, and they use a lot of wild food up there, yeah.
And is there groups of you? Like, do you have, like, a club or something like that, or is there an online...
Again, for anyone that was interested in starting out, there's like, when I started out, there was feck all. I got books, but now there's foraging groups, Foraging Ireland. You just type into the Facebook search bar of Foraging Ireland, you get 20, 30, 40 groups, and you put a decent picture of a plant up there, whereabouts you got a Southeast Ireland, and you'll get an answer within minutes to what it is and what it's used for.
And as I said, there's new apps out now which are available, which literally you can take a picture and it'll identify what the plant is. Which makes it a lot easier.
Wouldn't be 100%, but they're definitely a great starting point, and Google Reverse Image When I was starting out, there's a website called irishwildflowers.com, and I used to have to bring a flower home and search through hundreds of yellow flowers to try and narrow it down. But again, now with these websites and the apps and all, it makes life a lot easier. Mm-hmm. You know, for people, I suppose, trying to get into it, you know.
Well, look, it's certainly sustainable apart from anything else. But listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you, because I had no idea what a forager was up to the point that I started talking to you.
Yeah, no bother.
And if people want to follow you, by the way, on Instagram, they can. It's at the fanatical forager.
And I'm on Facebook there just as plain old Barry Weed. And they're more than welcome. You know, I love not more. I have a lot of followers, and someone will ask me a question or send me a picture or ask me for a recipe. And, you know, that's really what makes my life worthwhile. I love answering questions, and I love when people get inspired. And, you know, people might send me a picture. This is what I made with my wine garlic. Thank you for telling me where to get it or whatever. And, you know, that's not really what I get a buzz out of, I suppose, at the end of the day, you know.
Well, look, as I said, people can sample your wares as well in the Glenview Hotel in County Wicklow,
where
you're the development chef up there. But listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and it's been very interesting.
Lovely, Niall. Yeah, thank you very much for the call, and I really appreciate you having me on the show. Thanks
very much. You're very welcome. That is Barry Reed, not Weed, by the way, Reed. And he is, if you go on Instagram, it's there's a dot in between each word, at the Fanatical Forager. So there's a dot in between each word, the Fanatical Forager. Really interesting stuff. Anyway, listen, thank you very much indeed to everybody who got involved in the show. It was a really interesting conversation, particularly the one about the sustainable fashion, by the way, the fast fashion. I thought that was very interesting. I was surprised, by the way, to hear some people defending it. And I'm not one of these kind of mad liberals. I'm certainly not a person that would normally agree with Barry Andrews. But I do believe there should be some level of transparency when it comes to, you know, where goods are produced, how they're produced, how the people who produce them are treated. You know, I'm all for cheap goods, by the way, and I understand the point that Adam was making, you know, that a lot of these sites, you know, they do help people who don't have a huge amount of money to buy goods. But then again, when I look on TikTok and Instagram, a place like that, all I see is young ones of 16 years of age with bags and bags and bags of stuff from Shein that they don't even need, they don't even use, they'll wear once, if they even wear them once, just to get follows on Instagram. I don't know. Anyway, and they're making a lot of money out of people. Listen, thank you very much indeed. Thank you to AJ and Molly. I should be back again tomorrow night at 9 o'clock.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.